welcome to another special episode of Fault Lines, recorded live from the Reagan National Defense Forum here in Simi Valley. I'm Jessica Jones, NSI's Deputy Executive Director, and I'm joined today by Les Munson, NSI's Senior Fellow and Tallest Fellow. You can't tell because he's sitting down. And our very special guest, Secretary Leon Panetta, former Secretary of Defense and former Director of the CIA, as well as NSI Advisory Board member. Welcome, Secretary. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So you are speaking on the last panel of the day, RNDF at 10 years in, discussion on peace through strength with other national security experts, Stephen Hadley, Robert O'Brien. So if we look back 10 years, 2013, when RNDF started to today, how would you describe how American engagement in the world has changed?
Well, we have a long history of engagement with the world that goes back to World War II. And coming out of World War II, the United States really provided very strong world leadership, particularly with regards to dealing with the Soviet Union, the Cold War. I think the United States felt that it was really important to develop alliances in order to be able to confront threats to our national security. After the wall went down, and the Berlin Wall went down and the Soviet Union fell apart. I think that it became a period where, frankly, nobody kind of focused on whether or not we ought to be developing stronger alliances, dealing with national security threats and what have you. The United States, of course, ran into 9/11. And that mobilized our efforts to go after al-Qaeda and terrorism. But I'm not sure we spent a lot of time kind of working on building and strengthening the alliances that were out there in the world, particularly NATO and others. I think what has happened now is that there's a greater recognition because of the number of danger points that are out there in the world. And there are more flashpoints in the world today than I think since World War II, that in dealing with the threat from Russia, and dealing with the threat from China, North Korea, dealing with Iran, dealing with terrorism, that the key to that is really going to be to strengthen our alliances. And that came, obviously, first and foremost with Ukraine, where we were able to unify the NATO alliance and really provide the leadership to put that alliance to work in support of the Ukraine. And I think we recognize now more than ever the importance that the United States has to provide that world leadership if we are, in fact, going to be able to deal with these large flashpoints that threaten our national security.
And then speaking of flashpoints and in particular threats, I went back to 2013, the first RNDF and their agenda, and the first panel looked at rebalancing to Asia. Part of NSI's work and part of this interview series is focused on shedding light on today's global repressors, maybe the new tactics and technologies they're using. So, of course, China looms large in that conversation when it comes to their technology tools, surveillance, their economic tools, what have you. Do you think that the U.S. defense and policymaking communities have an accurate grasp of how much power China actually wields?
I think there's a greater recognition of the threat that is coming from China. I think there was a period where, and actually going back to the Nixon years and opening up the door to China, that I thought there was kind of an emphasis on trying to develop a diplomatic dialogue with China that would allow us to work on issues, whether it's cyber issues, whether it's issues related to space, whether it's issues related to trade, that we could be able to have that dialogue and be able to work together. I think that what we've learned, particularly with Xi and China accumulating more power, and also I think Xi recognized what Putin recognized, that there was a period where the United States to them appeared to be weakening in terms of the importance of dealing with countries abroad and providing the leadership that we just talked about. Putin, I think, sensed that, went into Crimea, did not pay a price, went into Libya, didn't pay a price, went into Syria, didn't pay a price, used obviously a very bold cyber attack on our election systems and didn't pay a price, then saw what happened in Afghanistan. And I think it created a sense that the United States was weak at that point. And I think she recognized those same issues. And so she has been much more aggressive now as a result of that, trying to fill what he thought was a vacuum. And so she, by virtue of his aggressive approach to building up their military, going into the South China Sea, threatening Taiwan, it has become a lot clearer now that we are, in fact, dealing with a real threat to our national security. And therefore, we do not only have to rebalance our forces to China, but I think we're going to have to develop an even stronger alliance in dealing with China.
Mr. Secretary, you spent some time in Congress as an elected representative. Your son's in Congress. You've got an amazing legacy on policymaking, but specifically on Congress, what's your assessment of where Congress is today, both in terms of how Congress understands the threats from abroad and its ability to do things in a bipartisan fashion?
Well, you know, I described the threats that are out there and the flashpoints that are out there. But all of it is taking place in a context that involves whether or not democracy is going to survive. The issue of autocracy versus democracy is very real. And all of the adversaries that I pointed to are basically autocrats who are interested in trying to undermine democracy. So democracy, without question, is being threatened abroad. But democracy is also being threatened here in this country. Because if we are to be a world leader, if we are to be strong on national defense, if we are to be strong in dealing with the threats I just talked about, you are going to have a democracy that is able to have both Republicans and Democrats work together in order to provide what is necessary for our national defense to be able to deal with these threats. My fear is that Washington, frankly, is dysfunctional right now.
I think it's a lot of people's fears.
Yeah, no, I think Washington is dysfunctional. Perhaps the Senate is able to work better, Republicans and Democrats. I think there is a better record on the Senate side. But on the House side, it's very divided. And the result is that a few members can literally undermine any effort to provide the funding that's necessary to take the steps that are necessary in order to protect our security. So it has become a lot tougher right now to provide the leadership necessary in order to protect our national security. And what that tells me is that perhaps the biggest threat to our national security are the divisions and the polarization that we currently have in Washington.
Do you think there's a chance that the threat of China is so large that you can have a body like the China Select Committee in the House that's bipartisan, that can finally begin to build some consensus, get American, voters informed on the topic and actually understand the nuances so that they can begin to get beyond the partisan divide, especially when it comes to important national security topics?
Yeah, as was mentioned, my son is a member of Congress and took my seat in the Congress. Jimmy was with me in Washington when I was there, and I often say that in my over 50 years of public life, I saw Washington at its best and Washington at its worst. The good news is I saw Washington work. I was there at a time when Republicans and Democrats really did work together on national security issues, on budget issues and other areas, because we thought that was important to protecting our country. Today, there are tremendous divisions that we just talked about. And partisanship that inhibit the ability to do that. But the one sign of hope that I see right now are that there are newer members being elected who really are more interested in governing than in basically fighting each other, pounding their shoe on the table. And so, groups like the Problem Solvers Caucus, where you have, I think it's 25 Democrats, 25 Republicans, trying to work together on these issues. I think there is a growing group of members who really want to focus on what can be done to work together to deal with these issues. And that gives me a sense of hope that perhaps we're moving in the right direction. I don't think this thing is going to change from the top down. I wish it would, but I don't think it is going to change from the top down. I think it's going to change from the bottom up.
Returning to the threats and our theme here of our interview about collaborations amongst global oppressors, you know, of course, it's not just China. There's Russia, Iran, North Korea. You know, I've asked a few of our guests, you know, are you surprised by the increased kind of working together of these nation states? Should we have been as a country surprised to see them, you know, growing closer? And what should we begin to do about it?
Well, there's no question that that's happening. And it concerns me because, frankly, one of our great strengths was the fact that China, Russia, and other adversaries are not that interested or haven't been that interested in developing alliances. And we have. And I think that was our great strength, is that we could build alliances and that those alliances were very strong in dealing with the threats that we were facing. What I'm sensing today is that this body of autocrats who are out there are seeing that with democracy being challenged in Ukraine, in Israel, elsewhere, in Taiwan, that it makes some sense for them to try to work together in confronting the alliances that they're facing in these various wars. I mean, to have a group from Hamas actually go to Russia and try to get assistance from Russia, to have Putin go hat in hand to Xi in China and try to get help there, to have North Korea providing the capabilities for them to be able to use drones, et cetera. We're seeing that there's been a sense that if autocrats are going to be able to be successful at undermining democracy, they're going to have to get their act together as well. And I think, you know, we have to be aware of that, and it puts even more pressure on us to build additional alliances, not just with NATO, not just in the Middle East, but in the Pacific, in Latin and Central America, and in Africa.
Speaking of allies and partners, Secretary Austin, in his remarks, discussed how Russia and China are trying to split the U.S. off from its traditional allies and partners, and we talk a lot on our podcast about the role of countries such as India or South Africa or Turkey that are sometimes now standing a little further apart from us than we'd like them to. You know, how successful are, you know, are the Chinas of the world in kind of starting to make space between us and those that usually stand closest? And, you know, how worried should we be kind of with the the growing of non-aligned countries?
Well, look, I think it's very important for the United States not to take anything for granted right now. I think if you want to know part of the problem that happened in Israel is I think Israel lowered its guard by taking things for granted and has paid a price for that. We can't afford to do that. We have got to be aware of what's happening, what our adversaries are up to, the kind of threat that they represent to security in the world. And we have to, through our intelligence capability and our military capability, be able to build the strength we need in order to show others in the world who can be potential allies that we can be a resource for them, not only to have them work with us to deal with these threats, but to help them provide for their security as well. We've got to be much bolder in exercising that kind of leadership. We just cannot afford to take the world for granted.
Speaking of that, we also discussed the expansion of BRICS on our show, you know, the growing movement maybe away from the dollar by a lot of these autocratic nations. And sometimes it doesn't get discussed as much in the economic element of our national security. I mean, do you see BRICS as a major challenge to the dollar moving forward, or just, you know, or is it just another venue where China's kind of wielding its influence?
Well, it's not only the national security challenge that we're confronting from these countries. But there's also an economic challenge that's part of that. Because, frankly, our strength rests on our military power. It rests on our intelligence capabilities. But it also rests on our economy. If our economy is falling apart, it'll undermine our ability to be able to address national security issues. Our adversaries understand that, and to the extent that they continue to make efforts to undermine our economic security, we have to view that as a threat to our national security. So it is very important that we look at what China's doing, we look at what other parts of that coalition of BRIC are doing that are aimed at undermining our economic strength. And we've got to get smart. I'm a little concerned, very frankly, that we aren't that interested in promoting free trade. I think the United States, if we're going to be a leader in the world, and if we want to protect our economy, we're going to have to understand that we're dealing with a global market and that we ought to be part of that market rather than trying to hide from it. So we've got to get a lot smarter in terms of the economic challenge as well as the other military and national security challenges that are out there.
Mr. Secretary, I noticed you didn't bring your dog to the forum. I know how important canines are to you. What's the dog situation for you right now?
We have another golden. We've had, I think this is our fourth or fifth golden.
I grew up with a golden.
Yeah, so we started with Bella. I think we had...
isn't Bravo in your official defense portrait?
I was going to say, yeah. We had Bravo, and Bravo was the dog that I had when I was at both director of the CIA and Secretary of Defense.
So he's seen something. And Bravo had seen something.
Bravo came with me. He was at the CIA during all of the meetings on the Bin Laden raid.
He had top clearance.
He had top clearance and never leaked a word of what he heard. And same thing was true at the Department of Defense. So I'm one of the few directors and secretaries that in my portrait, I've got my dog in the portrait.
And you have to have a friend, right? A steadfast friend.
People ask me, why did I do that? I think it was Harry Truman who said, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog.
And you did.
I did.
I'm going to end on that positive. That's probably the most positive thing we can say about Washington, D.C. That's a wrap. Thank you to Devlin Burney and the NSA team, and of course to Secretary Panetta for joining us today for this special episode. Please watch us on YouTube, and if you like what you heard, which you will, please rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you.
Thank you.